That's one of those emotions that we as Christians want to avoid. Jealousy and envy. And when you look at biblical words, some words almost always appear negatively. And that's the case with jealousy. There's a few cases where there's divine jealousy that is under consideration. The particular Greek word here sometimes is even translated zeal. And so we understand this is not always bad. But most of the time, and you can always tell by the context, that the idea of jealousy is something that is ungodly, something that we need to avoid. There's always trouble when it comes down to being jealous, being envious. It always leads to something bad. And so we're warned over and over. It's interesting that how often both Old and New Testament warns us about this emotion of jealousy. In the New Testament, it's in epistles written to Christians. Like, we have to be careful of not being jealous one of another or being jealous of anybody, because it leads to trouble. Turn over, and I'll call on Matt here, but turn over to James chapter 3 for a minute. Go ahead, Matt. Right. Yes. Right. There's some, and again, that's what I meant by divine jealousy. I think even Paul, maybe it's Philippians 3 somewhere, you could look it up. Paul talks about being jealous of the Philippians. But anyway, don't know the exact passage. But so every time that word is used, it's not negative. And again, you can tell by the text. You can tell, you know, like when it's listed, when jealousy is listed among the works of the flesh, obviously that's talking about something bad. And over here in James chapter 3, we'll see it obviously used in a negative way. And so we're not talking just about zeal, and not even talking about, like, it is possible. You know, if you're jealous of something, you want something that belongs to someone else, or you want something that someone else has. Well, there's minor degrees of that maybe we have all had. Like, have you ever seen someone drive down the road with a car maybe that you have always wanted, and you looked at that and said, man, I wish I had that. Well, you're going to hell for that. No, of course not. There's different levels of that situation. Now, of course, envy is when you want that car, you want what belongs to that other person. But even just with jealousy, there's degrees of it. And most of the time in biblical text, it is the higher, the more intense kind of jealousy that's under consideration. And when the Bible warns us about being jealous, that's usually what it's talking about. And here's a good case here in James chapter 3. At verse 14, it says, but if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. And so, you know, we can convince ourselves sometimes. It is dangerous, even with these different levels and intensity of jealousy, to think, well, it's not so bad. It's all right. Well, no, again, jealousy can spin out of control. Even the minor kind can spin out of control very quickly and turn into something more intense. And so he says, don't be false to the truth. Now watch, this is not the wisdom that comes down from heaven, but is earthly. Like, jealousy is carnal, it's fleshy, unspiritual. Hey, this is not a good picture of jealousy at all. If your heart is filled with jealousy, you have kicked spirituality to the curb. Like, you can't be spiritually minded and full of jealousy at the same time. And look at this next thing. He says it's earthly, unspiritual, and then he says demonic. Like, is that word ever used good? As a Christian, the last thing you want to be described as having is something that is demonic. And yet James says, that's what this bitter jealousy is. And he says, for where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. Like if the Bible was a person, I'd say, hey, Bible, give me an example of that. You know what he would say? The brothers of Joseph. They would be a perfect example of vile practice. They want to kill their own brother. Why? Because they have this bitter jealousy. They probably didn't always have it, but as Joseph was growing up and Jacob showing his favoritism and demonstrating his love for him more than them, it just grew and grew to now they hate him so much. And listen, that jealousy really is a seed of hatred. That's why it's so dangerous. Even the minor kind, it can, with regard to relationships, it can very quickly get out of control and turn to bitterness and hatred. And that's what happened with Joseph's brother. And the Bible warns us about that. Look at in First John chapter 3. When you think about hatred, again, jealousy, envy, the seed of hatred, hatred is the breeding ground to murder. When you stop and think about it. And that's what John tells us here in John 3. You know this passage, verse 15. Everyone who hates his brother is a murderer. The brothers of Joseph hate him. It's not surprising now that has gotten so out of control and so intense, they see him coming, let's kill him. Now, again, it's not surprising that it got to that intensity. It is shocking that brothers want to kill their own brother, but that's bitterness and jealousy out of control. And so look back up at verse 12. It says, we should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one, and murdered his brother. Who's the evil one? You all know who it is. Who's the evil one? The devil. Remember, bitter jealousy is demonic. And now we think, here's Cain. He killed his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil and his brother's righteous. He was jealous of his brother. And that spins out of control. It leads to vile practices. We need to take a lesson from this. As Christians, again, most of the passages that deal with jealousy and warn us against it being a work of the flesh and so on, those are passages written to us. The world is full of bitterness, jealousy, envy. We don't want to be like the world. It leads to bad things all the time. And it does here with the brothers of Joseph. And so they let that get out of control to the point where they hate him. And so they see him coming, and the only thing they can think of is, let's kill him. And we'll do away. Let's see what happens with his dreams after we kill him. And so, but there is one, it seems, who had a little conscience about him. Verse 21 says, but when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, let us not take his life. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood. Throw him in this pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him. And so their plan was to kill him. And so for all practical purposes, if Reuben didn't step in, Joseph was the dead man. They were going to kill him. That was their plan. They were going to carry that out. But Reuben, for whatever reason, he steps forward and says, no, let's not do that. And we're not told why. There's some indication later on in the text. This is as much self-preservation than anything. He's the oldest, and the oldest is responsible for the siblings most of the time. So he would bear most of the responsibility if something happens to Joseph. And so, and may, you know, it has been suggested that that he, you know, he has a plan. I didn't read all of that. His plan is to go back later and rescue him and take him, restore him to his father. And it could be that, you know, again, Reuben is the one who had relations with Jacob's concubine. And you know how much that hurt Jacob, and Reuben probably knows of that, and maybe he doesn't want to cause his father any more pain. You know, we don't know why he acted. Maybe he's just maturing and growing as a person. We don't know. But some of it is self-preservation, because he knows that if something happens to Joseph, he's the one that's going to bear the responsibility as the oldest child. And so, but he has a plan. Let's not kill him. Let's just throw him into this pit. And his idea was to later come back in and rescue him. That was his plan. Didn't work out the way it should. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore, and they took him and they threw him in a pit. The pit was empty and there was no water in it. And so the first thing they do is strip him of this robe. And you get the picture that they didn't do that gently. They tore that robe off. That robe represented everything they hated. It represented the fact that Jacob loved him more than them. It represented that Jacob thought he somehow was better and they was treated better than he treated them. And maybe even represented the fact that maybe they were even upset that Jacob didn't even seem to try to hide his favoritism. But everything was represented by this coat. So they rip it off of him. And in that way, they're basically saying, you know, we're doing away with all of this. And they throw him in this pit. And it's really, again, the callousness of these individuals is amazing. You look at verse 25, and then they sat down to eat. Can you imagine that? Like, no conscience at all, it seems. Later on, it does seem to indicate that this was on their mind through the years. But to act like that, I mean, they get this young man, at this point, Joseph's whole life has turned about. Like, just like that, it has changed. He didn't expect any of this. He's coming to his brothers, and he probably knew there was some hostility between him and his brothers, but I mean, being hostile towards someone is one thing. You don't really expect that they're going to kill him. Joseph didn't anticipate that. There's some brethren I know, not a whole lot, but there's a few brethren I know don't like me very much. But can you believe that? but I can think of two or three brethren who really don't like me a whole lot. And I'm so misunderstood. But you know what I doubt? I doubt they want to throw me in a pit. I doubt that they, if they had the opportunity, would kill me. Even though I know they don't care for me very much. Like, it's one thing, Joseph, obviously, his brothers can't even speak to him peacefully, but to think that they were going to grab him, rip off his robe, and throw him in a cistern, he probably never saw that coming. And then they just sit down and eat. Like, that's remarkable. You think Joseph just was in that pit and decided to sit down and fold his legs and just say, well, they'll let me out. No, this was a traumatic situation for Joseph. He doesn't know what's going on. His head is spinning. He's begging them to get him out. I mean, can you imagine? Later on, look at chapter 42. Later on, when things develop and he's risen to power and the brothers go to Egypt and have a confrontation with Joseph, They begin to think, and all this negative things, these things are happening. They don't yet know that Joseph is Joseph, but you know, they're in a little bit of trouble here in Egypt, and they're thinking, yeah, all of this is happening to us because of how we treated our brother. And listen to what they say about it at verse 21, then they said to one another, in truth, we are guilty concerning our brother. That's Joseph. Now watch. In that we saw the distress of his soul. Joseph is in distress in this pit. He wants out. He's begging them. Notice it says how did they see the distress of his soul? It says, when he begged us and we did not listen. That's their memory of it. Like he was begging, please, brothers, get me out of here. I'm sorry. Help me. Don't keep me in here. He's pleading, but he's begging them. And what are they doing? They're just eating. Hearing his cries, and they're just eating. You think his brothers were a little bit cold? That is something else, really, to think about. Yeah, go ahead, Mary. Yes, right. Yeah. Right. Right. I mean, just a teenager still. And again, all of this is kind of taking him by surprise. So his head is spinning and he doesn't know what's going on. He's begging and pleading for his brothers to let him out and help him put an end to this. And they're just eating. And that did work on their, you read this, through the years, they sort of remembered that. But at the time, that's how callous they were. What a terrible situation. We continue on there. Notice it says, and looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing gum, myrrh, and on their way, carrying it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to the brothers, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. Isn't it amazing the reasoning, the thinking of ungodly people? And this is what I was talking about earlier. They know enough to understand that what they're doing is wrong, and particularly because he's their own flesh. So Judah's thinking now is, he is our own flesh, so we ought not to kill him. But selling him as a slave to the Ishmaelites, that's all right. He's still our flesh, but that's okay. Like, who thinks like that? Don't kill him, but it's all right if we throw him in a pit and sell him into slavery. But that's how they're thinking. And take note of the fact that all of this, again, is providential in nature. Like, all these things had to happen just at the right time. We'll get into this a little bit later. But this caravan had to be coming at just the right time. If not, then Joseph would not have been sold into Egypt. And so everything is happening almost like clockwork, really. That allowed Joseph to get to Egypt and then eventually be exalted to power and preserve the people of God. And so very amazing here. But they see this caravan coming, and of course everybody would agree with this plan. Why just kill him when they could profit from it a little bit? And so his brothers listened to him, and the Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit. That is, his brothers did that, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. They took Joseph to Egypt. And so Joseph is sold into Egypt. And just really a pitiful situation there. But Joseph's life now, for the next several years, is changed radically. He goes from being a person of distinction within his family. And again, it's no fault of his own, but his father favors him. And he has this coat that distinguishes him. And he's treated better than his brothers, and probably going to be in a position of power. And just like that, he finds himself in distress. It's kind of like life, isn't it? Like, well, you really don't know. Do you think Do you think Joseph woke up that morning thinking, you know, by the end of this day, I'm going to be on my way to Egypt as a slave? Who knew? And that's the way life is. We don't know what's going to be on tomorrow. But going forward from this point forward, we just see Joseph that handling this beautifully. There's no indication whatsoever that he lost even a little bit of faith in God, or even that he was bitter towards his brothers. There's no indication of any of that. And I'm not saying he was completely void of that. He was human. But it wasn't to the point where it's recorded in Scripture that he was holding a grudge or anything else. He's just going, moving on, and dealing with whatever set before him with complete faith and confidence in God. And it's really a magnificent thing to behold. We need to be like Joseph. You don't know what's going to happen to you tomorrow, but you can control how you react to whatever it is. Will you throw up your hands and quit? Will you blame God? Will you become bitter? How are you going to handle the difficulties of life? We need to be like Joseph. He handled it beautifully. And we'll see that as we go forward. So we'll pick up there in a couple of weeks.